You probably haven't given it much thought since the name is so catchy, but the WPR and WPR Politics Podcast actually stands for Wisconsin Public Radio, which is where we all work, and which is about to start its spring membership drive. So if you want to support the podcast and all of the work that Sean and Laurel and everybody else does on the actual radio, you can make your gift by going to wpr.org/donate.
Oh, hey, podcast buddies.
Hey, Sean.
Hey, Sean. How's it going?
We've been doing this podcast for a while now, and, you know, I'm kind of hoping that we can do it for a while yet to come. I don't know how to say this. I got you guys podcast promise rings.
Aw, Sean.
Oh, my gosh. I can't believe this because I got you guys podcast promise rings, too.
Oh, my Laurel. Goodness. Oh, on the same week? This is crazy. Yeah.
But you guys, you're not going to believe this, but I went to the mall and I got these.
Holy.
They're beautiful.
Those are so, that's so much bling, John.
It's just because I love podcasting with you guys so much.
Don't cry, dude. Pull it together.
Well, if we're all going to be wearing each other's podcast rings and we're about to make a podcast right now, what should we podcast about?
What if we podcast about promises?
Aww.
Okay, let's do it. This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Laurel White.
This week, let's talk about promises that happened in the news.
Promises, promises, I'm all through.
So that, of course, is Dionne Warwick with her hit single Promises, Promises from her 11th studio album of the same name. But the reason we decided to really talk about promises this week and why we're all wearing each other's fake imaginary podcast promise rings.
They look beautiful. Guys, I'm touched. They're so pretend pretty on my fingers.
It's because there were a few stories in the news this week involving promises, but there's one we want to start on that involved Scott Walker making a promise to do or not do what?
To do or not do serving of his full four-year term.
And he came down on the to-do side.
Yes. To-do or not to-do, that is the question.
Well, there was a thing he said he wasn't going to do instead of doing that thing.
So we were at a press conference earlier this week with the governor, a gaggle of reporters, and someone asked him, Governor, would you leave the governor's office to work in the Trump administration at any point? And this is what the governor had to say about that.
So I can unequivocally, without hesitation, tell you I will never willingly leave the role as governor through the end of this next coming term. I'm running for re-election to serve a full term.
All right. And so why does that matter exactly, aside from knowing that if he wins, he'll be around for four more years?
Well, I think a couple things stick out to me. You know, sometimes you have to parse the governor's words and really try to figure out what is it that he's saying here. You know, he chooses his words carefully. Sometimes he doesn't want to come down and make a definitive stand like he did in this quote. But it seems like in this quote, he is closing the door to doing anything but being governor if he's elected in November. So the other reason that this is interesting is that he was asked a similar question in 2014. And to put that in context, the governor in 2014 was running for governor against Mary Burke. He was saying publicly, I want to be governor. Governor's what I want to do. This is the job that I want. But it was widely speculated at that point that he wanted to run for president, you know, that he was this national Republican figure. The 2016 election was on the horizon and that the governor, our governor, was going to run. Mm-hmm. So here's what he said when he was asked in 2014 whether he would serve his full four-year term if elected.
My plan is if the people of the state of Wisconsin elect me on November 4th is to be here for 4 years. Toinette and I had to work pretty hard three times now in the past 4 years to run for governor. It's a position I'm committed to.
So, you know, he is on the verge of fulfilling that promise, right? Because he has been governor up until now and, you know, presumably would be governor until the end of this term. But we know that in 2015, it was almost as soon as he was elected, he starts laying the foundation for a presidential campaign. Mm-hmm. So he wanted to break that promise. He was speaking in Iowa. He was speaking in New Hampshire. He was all over the place. A lot of his Wisconsin speeches took on a national flavor in what he was talking about. So that's the context that makes this interesting. Like, okay, we've heard this before. You know, why should we believe you now when you obviously wanted to do something different before?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess what's interesting to me, though, too, is that this context is different because he, you know, unless he does something sort of unprecedented and decides to challenge a sitting president in his own party in 2020, there's not something else that he's, you know, potentially vying for. So I guess why was this question asked and, you know, what does it mean this time?
We can't get in the mind of the reporter. In fact, as we sit here, we're not sure which reporter asked this at the Gaggle. But, you know, it's always interesting to pin down a governor or any elected official on something like this. The governor, Governor Walker, has been the most public about saying that the wind is not at Republicans' backs in this election cycle. A blue wave is coming and we're going to be in trouble unless we work hard. It's going to be harder than his recall campaign. So he's the one saying this is a potentially disastrous environment for people like me on the ballot. So, Governor, okay, if that's the case, would you leave this job and take a job in the Trump administration? He is on the record now saying, no, no way. Not going to do it. And this is a very similar answer to what he gave after he ended his presidential campaign, by the way, where he said, I talked to Tommy Thompson. He said his worst days as governor were, what was the quote, Laurel?
His worst days as governor were better than his best days as Health and Human Services Secretary. So, and the governor said that he has really taken that advice to heart. And so, you know, it is a different situation now, as you mentioned, John. You know, the governor, unless he's going to challenge a member of his own party, isn't going to run for president in 2020. And there's a difference between running for president and wanting to be president and taking a cabinet appointment. I mean, one of the things that the governor said about being governor is that you can affect a lot of change, you can do a lot of things, you feel like you have I don't know, a lot of power and sway in actually making a difference. And he said, I don't feel that way about being an administration official. And presumably you would feel that way about being president, right? Sort of a powerful person.
A little bit, yeah.
Ish, you know. So it's a different set of circumstances for Scott Walker now than it was then.
All right, guys, ready to talk about the next promise?
Let's do it.
Oh, promises, promises, this is where those promises, promises end. I don't
Next promise, Laurel White. Take it away.
All right. So the next promise is a promise from the federal government to the state of Wisconsin. They are promising $7 million.
Stacks on stacks on stacks.
Stacks on stacks on stacks of cash to help the state of Wisconsin bolster its election system security over the next several years.
I think aside from podcast promises, intergovernmental promises are the most cherished. They're
Indeed.
Special.
Indeed. It's a sacred and beautiful promise between the federal government and the state of Wisconsin. Oh, it's really, I thought this was really interesting because, you know, the State Elections Commission, which is the body that will decide what to do with this money, had a hearing this week to talk about kind of some of the plans. They haven't gotten the money yet. There are a couple sort of bureaucratic things that have to happen. The state has to agree to accept the money, and then they get it, and then, you know, it has to be dispersed for certain things. But the Elections Commission talked about what they want to use the money for first, and then kind of some of the long-term plans for it. So they said the first thing that they want to do is hire some additional staff to help them with elections administration. And that's interesting because that was something that we covered in the budget, additional staff for the State Elections Commission.
It seems like it's often something we cover in the budget mm-hmm. where the Elections Commission or the predecessor, the Government Accountability Board, says we need more staff, and they aren't always met with a resounding okay. In this case, they were pushing for more state money, and apparently decided that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah. So basically they said this week, like, we decided, you know, that our quest to get more people from the state wasn't really going to work out. So we found out we're getting this federal money. We withdraw our request from the state, and we're going to use some of this incoming cash to bolster our state elections workforce. They're also going to do some tech things that are moderately complicated and difficult to explain for people who aren't like tech experts. There's this multi-factor authentication thing.
Whoa.
I know, right? That they want to do to their like online election systems. And then they want to hire some more IT people to help with like general security, like server security, things like that. And then they want to train clerks on specific security measures. That's stuff they're already doing, but they want to like offer more, expand it.
Well, that all sounds interesting. And, you know, multi-factor authentication is pretty cool. But you know me, if there's anything I like more than promises and devotion, it's conflict. And I want to know, what is this money going to do with like Russian hacking? Was that asked of anybody at this event? Did they make a big deal out of it? Like, with this money, we will stop Russians from stealing our elections.
So it obviously came up, right? Reporters asked the chair of the Elections Commission after the meeting was over, can you guarantee that there's going to be no Russian hacking in the 2018 election in Wisconsin? And he said, no, I can't guarantee that. I'm not.
No promise.
I'm not going to make any promises. I'm not the Department of Homeland Security. He said, we could only do what we can do, but this money that's going to come in from the federal government is much appreciated and much needed. So.
And after that, he said, but I can promise you I'll be the best elections commission chair around. And he slipped a promise ring on each reporter. No, that didn't happen.
Fake news.
That was really. But I self-identified it as fake news within a second. It's like a 5-second rule for dropping food. Okay. Next promise?
Yep.
Oh, promises, those kind of promises take all the joy from love. Oh, promises.
Okay, so our next promise, guys, is a contract dispute. Oh my goodness, it's a promise story of the highest order. And this one involves suspended Marquette professor John McAdams, who took his case to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And this is a thorny case because it involves people's reputations. It involves some pretty heavy material. It involves a dispute between groups that are normally pals. Mm-hmm. And
it's a free speech on campus issue,
which is
a big political issue these days.
So where to start? So John McAdams is a political science professor, an outspoken conservative on Marquette University's campus, and has been a conservative blogger for years, likes to mix things up. And so the way that he gets involved in this story is that there was a graduate student instructor on the Marquette campus who was teaching a philosophy class. And she said that everybody agrees with gay rights and there was no reason to discuss it in her class. A student who didn't share that view came up to her after class and told her. And she said in a conversation that this student recorded that she wasn't going to allow for homophobic remarks in her class and suggested that he drop the class if he had an issue with that. This student takes it to McAdams, who mm-hmm. blogs about it and links to her personal blog, and you know, which gives people a way to contact her. And she begins getting what she describes as threatening messages. The university, Marquette University, says that's not, you know, in keeping with what a Marquette professor is supposed to do. They suspend him without pay. That is upheld by faculty who reviewed the suspension. And McAdams says, all right, I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to sue you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Are you hooked on this story? It's pretty interesting.
Sounds promising to me.
Yeah, light and bubbly and just everything we are on the podcast, right? Okay, so what happens is McAdams gets represented by the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty,
which otherwise is known as Will.
Will, a conservative, a conservative law firm at this point, think tank slash law firm in Wisconsin, but they are in an adversarial position here against Marquette and against Milwaukee's business community, who says this is a private college, a private employer, and they need to have the right to discipline their employees the way that they want to. We don't like you setting a precedent that they can't do that. So it's sort of a contract dispute at its core. McAdams is saying, you violated my contract because I deserve academic freedom on campus to talk about the issues of the day. Mm-hmm. And Marquette is saying, you violated your contract, your promise, mm-hmm. when you put this Marquette student in danger.
So what happens now? I mean, so we heard these arguments in the Supreme Court on Thursday of this week.
Mm-hmm.
What happens now?
Well, the arguments hinted pretty strongly that, like, Justice Michael Gableman, for example, was going to side with McAdams. He was calling Marquette's position Orwellian. Patience Rogensack, the conservative chief justice, we don't know where she is on this. She was kind of asking, are First Amendment rights different for somebody who works at a private college versus, say, the University of Wisconsin-Madison? Because the First Amendment is a protection of free speech. It protects against the government infringing upon your speech. So UW-Madison has government ties. Marquette mm-hmm. does not. So is this case different because McAdams works at Marquette versus UW-Madison?
So, yeah, I mean, this is obviously a really interesting case, and we'll just have to stay tuned for when the Supreme Court issues its opinion. That can happen kind of any time-ish.
Justice Gableman, who heard the case, will serve through July, and Rebecca Dallet, the new justice, takes office in August. So they would decide it before then.
All right, let's hear some more Dionne Warwick real quick. Well, we started with Governor Scott Walker promising to be around if he's elected. How about we end with Governor Scott Walker promising something else, namely money?
Yeah, so the governor signed a big piece of legislation this week, something that he had talked about back in his State of the State address, and that was a new law that authorizes a sales tax holiday in Wisconsin and a one-time $100 child tax credit. But the interesting thing that the governor did this week was he vetoed the bill to expand both the sales tax holiday and the child tax credit. So he's promising even more money to Wisconsin parents and purchasers of things.
Purchasers of things.
Yes.
Consumers.
Consumers of goods.
AKA consumers of things.
So, I mean, how did he get to this point where he was able to promise more money? If the legislature said, this is how much money we're going to say that you can give to consumers of goods, how did he then promise more?
Well, I think this is pretty interesting. Partial vetoes, to me, are like, after promises, promises, conflict,
vetoes.
And then partial vetoes are a close third for me. And
what
things
about
that I
intergovernment
like.
Sorry. Relations?
Yes, you're right.
That's a type of promise.
Oh man, we are dorks. So here's what the governor, we always say this, but here's an example of what it means when we say this. The governor of Wisconsin has very strong partial veto powers. They have been restricted bit by bit over the years, but they are still strong. Take this for example. The governor had this portion of the bill before him that said, quote, for the 2-day period beginning on the first Saturday in August and ending on the following Sunday. So that's referring to the time period during which this sales tax holiday is going to be in place.
Mm-hmm.
And what the governor did was he struck the word 2-day and he struck the word Saturday so that it read after he vetoed it, for the period beginning on the 1st in August and ending on the following Sunday. And that magically makes it August 1st
mm-hmm.
to the 5th. I mean, it was some pretty good veto ninja work there by the governor.
Yeah.
So it took from describing a day in August, the first
Saturday,
and then turned it into an actual date, the first in
August.
The
first in August, yeah, I know.
That's pretty cool.
So I know, impressive. What I heard about this.
That is impressive.
Like, I was like, wait, how can he do this? The legislature said it would be these days, and he can't just change that, can he? But he can. And
he used the power of copy editing to change law.
Yes, he did. And what this did is it added that step right there, added a projected $3 million increase to state government for the price of this sales tax holiday. So it went from like $11.8 million that it was projected to cost the state to $14.8 million. Mm-hmm. I think that's a little significant because I remember when they passed this in the Senate, Senator Fitzgerald said a lot of his members, or some of his members anyway, had concerns with the cost of the sales tax holiday. So they had already scaled it back and he was okay with $12 million. And then the governor said, well, let me just do some of these, just change a couple words here. And now it's $15 million. So that, you know, that extra $3 million bucks isn't going to break the bank for the state. But it is an example of the price tag going in a different direction than Senate Republicans were pushing for. Although Senator Alberta Darling, Republican co-chair of the Finance Committee, was at the bill signing and she was fine with it.
I think another thing to mention, just because the other part of this bill was also expanded. So there's a one-time $100 child tax credit that is projected to cost the state $122 million. And the governor did some fancy vetoing work with that as well and expanded it from just parents of children in Wisconsin to like family members that are guardians, so grandparents, aunts and uncles, things like that. And the cost increase there was pretty marginal. I think he said like there were 40,000 families or some.
I don't think they gave a number there for that, like on what it would,
right,
what the projection would go up.
Yeah, they didn't give it, but it's, you know, $100 per kid. And
yep.
So not a huge increase there, but another kind of expansion from the governor in this bill signing this week.
And both of these things, the sales tax holiday and the child tax credit, are only one time and they will take effect pretty close to the election. So more details on how you get that money if you're a parent with kids or a grandparent or an aunt coming up in mid-May. The state promises they will let you know that.
Well, we promise to podcast about that and for everything else forever. Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief.
Laurel White is WPR's Capitol Reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd. Oh,
promises, promises, my kind of promises.
We here at the WPR Politics Podcast can promise that you will likely get a new episode almost every week when you subscribe on iTunes. You can also find it on Google Play and many other podcast apps. And you can catch up on all of our past episodes anytime you like at wpr.org/politics.